Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
On your desk, you will find an envelope which contains the name of a mode of transport.
You have 3 hours to build this in any way you like.
We'll be looking for aesthetics and playability.
3, 2, 1.
Sports car.
Monster truck.
We need some steps on here for men to stand on.
Haven't got the rest. Okay, just take the bomb on us.
You can indeed.
Do we go for an exploration style submarine? Yeah, motor on the back.
The judges want to see functional vehicles with motors, rotors, wheels, and all that other fiddly, hard-to-make stuff.
That's Lego Masters. It's running on Thursdays on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. James Dempsey joins us once again. Oh God. I don't know. Is it? I suppose it's an attempt to kind of, because Lego was a kind of an old-fashioned thing.
Except
it seemed to be wholesome.
That's true, but Lego, I think, even in the last 5 years, has undergone this completely brand renaissance and burst back into the fold and suddenly become the most successful toy brand in the world, largely thanks to its movie tie-in sets, which cost an absolute fortune, and then the Lego movies that are coming out pretty regularly now. But yeah, this is just basically the Great British Bake Off, except with Lego bricks instead. And I think it's kind of interesting to watch because we are now at a period where maybe we're going to reach saturation point at this sort of reality competition show, because they either have to go very varied or very niche. And I wouldn't say Lego is particularly niche, but what is kind of interesting about it is, as a reality competition show, it features pairs competing, you know, duos. The youngest pair in it are 9 years old, and they are competing against a pair of Cambridge engineering nearly graduates.
Okay.
And they're not doing badly at all. I mean, they've survived the first 2 weeks, the 2 9-year-olds, and they are still in it. I mean, adults have been kicked out at this stage. Mm. So there's a bit of novelty to it in that. There's also just a lot of charm in Lego. It's just, you know, what works about the Bake Off, which I was talking to Tom last week, is that even if you can't taste it, you can imagine that it tastes nice, right?
Yeah.
When you look at Lego, everyone sort of remembers their childhood of piecing it together and standing on the pieces and all those jokes that get worn a million times. And there's just something incredibly charming about these little bricks and these incredibly ornate worlds that they build and the little minifigures that they position in them. And the challenges are quite difficult. I mean, I kind of marvelled at the 9-year-olds, because in the very first week of it, the challenge was to build a chair that an adult could sit on. The adult happened to be the male presenter, Melvin Odom, I'll come back to in a moment. But the 9-year-olds were competing against for 14 hours. It was a 14-hour challenge.
Crikey.
I mean, is that exploitation?
Yeah. There's a whole range of laws they violated there.
So I think there's definitely a lot of charm to it. If it comes back for a second season, because there's only going to be 4 episodes in this first one.
Okay.
If it is successful enough to merit a second season, I think they need to change a few things up. Because at this stage, we're very used to this reality competition format. They come in, they have one challenge, they get judged, they have a second challenge, they get judged, somebody gets cut. Ultimately, the challenge is, you know, how different are they, really? I mean, it's baking a cake, it's making a dress, it's building, you know, a chair out of Lego. So you need more than just the challenge to sustain the show, because watching people doing things is really boring.
Yes.
So you need charming hosts and insightful and or incredibly cutting and bitchy judges to rip them to shreds, because you need the theatre of the spectacle to be thrown in. Where this is really let down is in its presenting and judging. So you have Melvin Odom, who I am not familiar with. I know he was in the last Strictly Come Dancing. I think he went out fairly early on. He's a British radio presenter. He's no Mel and Sue, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
He's no Noel and Sandy, even on a good day. At his best, he adds nothing to the show. I mean, his voiceover is in this incredibly annoying, childish tone, because I guess it is a more family-orientated show than others. And he's not witty, he's not clever. For me, he is just nothing. Then you have the judges. The main one is a man named Matthew Ashton, who is the vice president of design at Lego, which, you know, is a bit of pedigree, definitely.
Okay.
But he's not a broadcaster. He's not a presenter. Ultimately, in these kind of judgings, you're not actually looking for someone who, you know, knows all of the rule book. You want someone who's entertaining and who's discerning and who can make sort of a very insightful or clever point in an entertaining fashion. And I really want to underline and circle that in red. Because if they're boring, you just get nothing out of it. And he is, I'm sure he's extremely good at designing Lego, but he's not particularly good at, you know, at judging them in an entertaining way.
Maybe he had to be there. Maybe there's some sort
of
sponsorship.
I'd say there is an agreement, one of the main prizes is that their Lego creation will be on display at the new Lego Museum in, I think, somewhere in Denmark. I can't remember. I think it's Aarhus rather than Copenhagen. Anyway, but he adds not much to it. But yeah, I understand there has to be somebody, you know, somebody will say from the Lego brand has to be on board. Fine. Then they have a rotating roster of judges. So the first week it was an architectural engineer who was judging it from sort of a structural standpoint.
Okay.
Last week it was an expert in fluid dynamics who was judging it because they had to include moving pieces in their Lego and judging it from that point. They then also rope in the odd celebrity, and it's the usual kind of geek-friendly celebrities, so Dara O'Brien, Richard Osman, Bill Bailey, who come in and sort of marvel at Lego. So they need to find, if they come back, which I could easily see them happening, because it's been popular and well received so far, at the midway point anyway. If they come back, I just think they need to, you know, zhuzh it up a bit with some more entertainment.
Like in Bake Off, do you give a damn about the contestants? And are they all male?
A lot of them are male. There was a lot made about the fact that there was one all-female duo and that they were there for the girls and they were going to do things in pink to be there for the girls. And Lego is actually a brand that has this very famous advert from the 1980s that had a little girl in it, and it always tries to push Lego towards girls as well. Not that it doesn't succumb to the usual sort of gender, etc. We'll go into that in our gender studies class. But a lot of them are men. There is one mother and son duo who are actually Irish, who in typical British fashion, they cannot at all pronounce his Irish name. He's Fuelon. And if you think they could ever manage their way to an on, you are dreaming. But it's mostly younger men and men involved as well. Yeah, so I guess it does fall into that. Do I care about them? They're not. They don't really get as much screen time as, or their backgrounds really aren't gone into as far as in other reality shows. They're definitely not pulling at your heartstrings. This is very much about the build, the design, and so on and so forth. You get more about the challenge than about those being challenged, I would say.
Because as with Bake Off, there's more of an emotional attachment to cakes. Cakes say things to us. Lego chairs don't.
That is really very true, yeah. Or certainly, I mean, you have to also bear in mind that this is Lego being completely and utterly invented in their own minds. So a specific Lego set might appeal to you because it's like your, you know, it's your Madeleine that you put that brick into the top of it, and it brings back all memories of your childhood. This, they are completely coming up with it themselves. They're given a vague brief. So like, for example, they had to create a banquet set. So they had to create the chair for Leslie to sit on, or for Melvin, sorry, to sit on. And then they had to create some kind of banquet meal based on a theme. So, you know, they completely come up with that themselves and then they're judged on it.
The things they make, are they impressive?
They are impressive. I will say that. And even, you know, the set is beautifully laid out. There's more than a million bricks available to them in something like 50 different shades of colours. Every Lego piece you could ever even possibly imagine, you know, is there and available to them. And Lego is in itself small, bright, colourful. So, you know, the screen, if you're watching it in any kind of like high definition, it is just beautiful and dazzling and intricate and clever and witty and fun. So there's a lot of visual, you know, there's a lot of visual panache to the show, and that you definitely get. And there's drama as well. I mean, you see them knocking over a piece and it's scattering to 1,000 pieces, and there's a bit of Schadenfreude in that as well.
Yeah. Now, is it one of the, like, if you had a choice between just walking past one of their constructions and going, wow, that's impressive, or having to sit there for half an hour watching them build the blinking thing, which would you choose?
I guess there's enough of them that, like, it's not an ordeal to sit and watch this for the 50 or 45 minutes that it runs to in total. Yeah, I guess I would like to see them in person. Yeah, I would. I mean, but would I want to stand there watching them make it for 30 minutes? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Probably not. But yeah. In the magic of TV, they speed things up a bit and they intercut other people. So it's not too bad.
Okay, right. A few bits of TV news. Australia's banned an episode of Peppa Pig.
Yeah, what I couldn't believe about this is that it is an episode of Peppa Pig that is from 2004, which really shows how much lasting power Peppa Pig has. Because I think you know, whatever they're called, tots or tidy tots, whatever they are. Whatever.
Toddlers.
Toddlers.
Yeah.
That if they still love Peppa Pig in 2017, she has had major lasting power.
Oh, they
power.
Do. Oh, they do. It's like, it's like some sort of drug. like you can, like, because I have a toddler who, like, and Peppa Pig comes on, she just stops and looks at it. And then when it finishes, she just moves on to destroy the next thing in the house. But Peppa Pig is like, I don't know, it has a mesmeric effect upon it.
For a very long time. So whoever invented Peppa Pig
it's
must
genius.
Be rolling in it.
Yeah.
But this episode is called Mr. Skinny Legs. And in it, Peppa is playing with her brother, who I believe is named George, who I don't think speaks, but just sort of oinks and does that. Peppa, the only speaking pig in the show.
No, there's Mommy Pig and Daddy Pig.
Okay. So they're playing with Peppa's dollhouse, and George goes off to the bathroom and he encounters a spider. And he and the spider become very friendly and start playing with each other. And obviously in Western Europe, that's not a big deal because the spiders that we have in our bathrooms are not really going to hurt you. But down under, they have a bit more bang to their buck.
Fair enough.
So there was a lot of concern that children, young, very young children would be seeing this and perhaps then see a huntsman spider, I think, in their own bathroom and decide, oh, there's Mr. Skinny Legs. And then suddenly it wouldn't be doing well, they wouldn't be going great.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Peppa Pig is also, I know you've probably not watched Peppa Pig extensively, it's extraordinarily sexist. It's the most, it's a very anti-man program.
Peppa Chauvinist Pig.
Peppa Chauvinist Pig. It's like, it's Stupid Daddy. Every time it's Stupid Daddy, gags about his belly. You know, he always has a trumped up idea of what he can't do and then he can't do it. And that's kind of a regular theme.
Okay.
Plus, Peppa gets too much of her own way, if you ask me. She's a spoiled brat. Everything is can I do at first, and then the parents just roll over and say yes.
Fair enough.
Right, Sean, somebody else who could do it a good slap in the air, Sean Spicer, he's gone into TV.
Now, this is reported, so take this with a pinch of salt, but it was on The Hollywood Reporter, which is generally quite a credible source for entertainment news. So obviously everyone knows who Sean Spicer was, former press secretary, made the biggest impact on day one when he came out with that now infamous press conference that was just like your angriest teacher scolding you. And he has left the White House after Aramucci was brought in and then left anyway. And seemingly he is now shipping around for representation in Hollywood because his name has big brand recognition. And it's not just that he wants to do sort of, you know, talking head stuff on Fox News, which I'm sure we'll see him doing at some point. But he seems to also be interested in doing more light entertainment and cameo appearances on sitcoms or dramas and working as a political consultant on political dramas as well. Now, he's going to have a bit of rivalry because seemingly Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, is also trading on his name recognition and trying to develop some kind of, you know, TV deal around him as well. So it's, I mean, that's what we're getting from this White House.
That's extraordinary. That is extraordinary. Right, we have to take a commercial break. A couple more shows to talk about after this.
Because we've been focused on Escobar the past few years didn't mean we were completely ignoring the Cali Godfathers.
I want updates from Duffy and Lopez on where we're at with Cornerstone. Hey,
sir. Yes, sir.
We had agents on them the whole time. Good agents. And recently, they'd gotten lucky. The latest break in the case against Cali came from a joint customs DEA operation called Cornerstone. And it put a lot of mid-level Cali guys behind bars in the States. And while they weren't eager to help us, you can always count on some poor relative in Colombia who would do whatever it takes to get their brother or son back home.
There you go, that's Narcos. Season 3 of that is now streaming on Netflix. Was it the original series of Narcos, was it in English?
So it's bilingual.
I mean,
and by bilingual, I would say it's actually a more Spanish-leaning language show than English. But there's definitely plenty of English in it. But I do find when I'm watching it, I'm not a Spanish speaker. So, like, as my focus would drift, as it does in all TV shows, because we're completely spoiled by second screens, they'll be start speaking Spanish, and I know I have to look up because I need to read the subtitles. But so it's returning for a third season, and this is kind of an interesting time for Narcos. Because the first two seasons were ostensibly about the role of Pablo Escobar in the Colombian drug racket. And it was very clear when the tagline for the second season came out that Pablo Escobar was going to be killed off, as happened in real life. So we knew that before it even aired. And now he's dead. So where do they go? And it's kind of interesting because they've lost... You know, Wagner Murno, I think is his name, was the man, this Brazilian actor who was playing Pablo Escobar, who was very much the central, you know, central villain of the entire piece. And they've also lost Boyd Holbrook, who was Agent Murphy of the DEA, the blonde guy with the blonde mustache. He is gone as well and has completely disappeared. Where to? I'm not quite clear. But instead, now we have the show centered around Pedro Pascal, who people will know from Game of Thrones, where he was Oberon, as Javier Peña. So he is still the DEA agent, and now he's back in Colombia, having, you know, seen off Pablo Escobar to deal with the Cali cartel. And my biggest problem with Narcos is I do think it's very entertaining. I think it's very good. I think it's nicely shot with these beautiful montage scenes. And I think they fill you in on the history of Colombia and the drug trade very well and very effectively. My problems are twofold. The first is I have absolutely no concept of the passage of time between episode one of, you know, Pablo Escobar to now this Cali cartel. I could not tell you how many years have passed. You know, it could be 3 months. It could be 15 years. I have absolutely no idea. Nobody has aged. Fashions have not changed in the least. The technology
on the screen in front of me, James, is long detailed explanations appearing already. That's how you're supposed to infer the passage of time, but we don't have the time to go into all of that.
The other problem is there is not one single female role in this show that is worth watching. They are all these sort of stressed out wives of drug cartel lords who basically are giving out to them at home, why aren't you home for dinner time? And or going, where's my husband? Where is he gone? I don't know, because he's been killed. So these are all the female roles in this show. And it'll be interesting.
But if you're it's an interesting point though. If you're depicting a world like that, which is a male world,
I guess,
let's face it, do you kind of manufacture a role for so there can be a strong woman or women in it?
I think in this day and age you almost have to, because every episode of season 3 opens up with a black title card saying this is based on true events, but certain events have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes.
Yeah.
So look, you just can't ignore women anymore. It's not the done thing. You have to find a place for them somewhere. Right? Make some of the people in the DEA office women. Just do something. You have to, right? So apart from that, I haven't seen all of this season. I'm only about 4 episodes in. For me, I still think it's very good. It's very entertaining. It's not the most essential viewing you'll ever need to make. I just don't think it ever gets its hooks into you that way. But it is very nice in a diverting and interesting way. And I'm very intrigued to see where they're going to go because, well, we know historically the Cali cartel has a window of operation that closes at some point as well. And Narcos seemingly is going to go on for a while yet. So realistically, it's probably going to go next to Mexico with El Chapo, which will be interesting because, you know, he escaped through a toilet and then drove a motorbike through a tunnel.
Okay, that's that should be a fun image. But as a vehicle for storytelling, does it do that efficiently?
Yeah, I do think, yes, I do think so. Apart from my hair splitting there about the passage of time, I do think it is very effective. Sometimes it is quite funny. Very often it's very brutally violent and shocking and all that. And it certainly goes to show that, the narcotics industry is very much this industry. It is regulated. It's massive. It's this global thing.
It's regulated by whom?
By themselves. So the Cali cartel, their whole point is that they are these like gentlemen, gentlemen narcos, that they were very much in control, very fastidious record keepers, all that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. Probably, that's probably not a wise thing in terms of Well, after you're arrested, no, so to speak. True. Now, our third show today that James has chosen kind of isn't a TV show, though it might be in the future, and it should be. Anyway, it's called Inhumans. It's the latest one from Marvel. Here's a clip, and James can explain what that's all about afterwards.
Contact Blackpool. Black Bolt, it's me. I'm here on Earth, somewhere. I'm safe. I'm in a crater, I think. Are you here? Can you hear me? Please, just let me know that you're okay. Thank you.
There you go. That's Inhumans. Now, that's being shown in IMAX cinemas around the world. Is that as a kind of a marketing tool to get TV stations to pick it up?
No. So here's what happened, right? So Inhumans is a Stan Lee, Jack Kirby kind of... It's an offshoot of the Fantastic Four, all right?
Okay.
So it's about these people with all these special powers. They live in a palace in a city called Atalan on the moon. Their king is Black Bolt, who is unable to speak because when he does, his voice is so powerful, it is, you know, it's like a shockwave and it would kill you. Okay. And we heard there his wife Medusa, who has the power of prehensile hair. And let's just go with it. Right? Just go with it. So the reason why
what
it was on
prehensile hair, dude.
She can like use it to punch people and you know, coil around people and bind them.
And the fella she's married to, given that he's never spoken to her, how did they get married? Do you know, find out about their courtship?
We do find vaguely about their courtship in this IMAX episode, which was the first two episodes. Of 8 episodes run.
Okay.
Now, what originally happened was Inhumans was slated to be a Marvel cinematic release, and then it got quietly parked off. And IMAX, the cinema screen, we'll say, that company struck a deal with Marvel and ABC to bring it to the small screen, but film it specifically for IMAX cinemas. So it came out last Friday. It is running even on through the next weekend as well, although it has not been a box office success. So it is playing at roughly about 1,000 screens around the world, which is not massive, right?
Okay.
But in it, at 1,000 screens, it's taken about 2.6 million.
Around the world, that's not great.
Which is not great at all. Now, I went to see it on Sunday morning.
So it is showing in Ireland.
It's showing in Dublin.
Yeah.
I can't speak to other cities. Sorry for my liberal Dublin bias.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, it's showing in Dublin 4.
Yeah. So it's showing in Dublin, and I went on Sunday, and it was in the biggest screen in the cinema, which easily sits 250-300 people.
Mm.
I think there were 6 lone men of which I was one. Now, there's this industry term called a boondoggle, which refers to when something is incredibly expensive and makes absolutely no money at all.
Okay.
This is the TV boondoggle of the year. It is absolutely pants. It is total rubbish. So it is about, as I said, this royal family living on the moon. They're this society. They expose everyone who is in the city of Atalan to this thing called the Terrigen Mist, which is a mist. It's like a bit of fog, a smoke machine, right? And what that does is it either brings about your mutant powers, but I can't say mutant because that's owned by Fox, so it's a whole different rights thing. So special abilities, or it doesn't. If you are one of the small group of people whose mutant powers are latent and never appear, You get sent down the mines in the moon, and you have to live your life mining.
That's a bit harsh.
Yeah. Right. So then the show is about the King Black Bolt, his brother, whose name escapes me, Maximus, who's played by Ewan Rian, who of Game of Thrones fame, Ramsay Bolton.
All right.
He is one of these powerless mutants. He leads a coup against the king, and the king and the family all escape to Hawaii. But we're supposed to be on the king's side. But in my mind, all of the noble, action is in the usurper, because he's trying to basically improve the life of this caste system that is terrible.
Yeah, that sounds awful. When they escape to Hawaii, is it like current day Hawaii?
It is current day Hawaii. It's current day Hawaii.
So, and no one's noticed there's people living on the moon?
No one has noticed the people living on the moon. There are a few human beings on Earth. So the Inhumans left Earth long ago to seek exile on the moon. There are a few descendants of Inhumans on Earth who also eventually get exposed to the Terrigen Mist and also develop their powers as well. The whole thing was so tonally odd. I mean, when I was watching it, I kind of was thinking, okay, this is, you know, this is like something you would have seen back in the 90s on a Saturday evening at 5 o'clock. The Adventures of Lois and Clark style, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a bit of a very light, you know, easily wrapped up in one episode kind of problems. No real violence, but maybe a bit of punching, but never any blood or anything. Mm. And I was like, okay, this is for families. Then, about 50 minutes in, they started stabbing each other quite aggressively and, you know, killing people by breaking their necks, innocent victims, and never, you know, batting an eyelid at this. And I was thinking, what on earth is going on here? The whole thing is just utterly strange. It has been picked up by ABC. They've already made the 8 episodes, so it's going to go out in the US at all. As far as I can tell, so far, no European broadcaster has picked it up at all. It might get a second season just because these Marvel shows, they do find a cohort of audiences in the US no matter what. Even though they have very low viewing figures for sort of live TV, when you add in the +7, which is people catching up on any kind of service, they get up to about 5 million people, which is enough to keep them going. So it could, I mean, it could last, but when I say it is bad... Just think, like, and the pre. I
how mean, much did it cost him to make this?
So it's unclear, but definitely like in excess of a couple of million anyway per episode. Definitely.
You see, the odd thing is now, just from your description, because it's so bad and so bonker sounding, I kind of want to see it.
Well, what I do recommend is, so the trailer came out about a month ago. It was absolutely lambasted on the internet, because particularly with Medusa, who is this character who, if you ever Google Medusa, she's got massive, massive red hair, like a drag queen, right? Yeah. Like on her best day. The wig that they gave this actress, Serinda Swan is her name. I mean, I genuinely have seen better wigs on stag do's, you know, men going around Temple Bar. It is limp nonsense. Oh, it's terrible. Everything about it was just abysmal.
And it's not like deliberately bad. It's not.
No,
it doesn't tip over into so bad it's good territory, perhaps.
Actually, here's one other thing, just very quickly. So Black Bolt doesn't speak. The actor who plays him should therefore be this incredibly expressive, you know, able to communicate all of his thoughts. He is the most generic, like nothing. He also created I read this big song and dance press release about how he had created his own sign language that he himself had invented. Now, when you watch it, it's literally like him moving his hand up and down, left and right, tapping two fingers, and that's it. And this, like, he allegedly has a 50-page, you know, we'll say, dictionary of terms that he has created specific to his language. And it's just nonsense.
Right, there you go. That's Inhumans. You can't watch it on the telly, or at least not yet. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big cheque for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.